And hello! Hey, everybody. It's the Lean Into Art Cast, the show where a couple of visual storytellers get together and take a walk around a slippery, sometimes thorny, usually semi-dangerous topic. How do we do it and survive? Well, we've got a system for dealing with these topics, and for that, I'm going to hand over to our resident metaphor maker, Rob Stenzinger, who will explain what the system is.
The system involves dancing for all that we're worth. It's it starts out with a slow rhythm where we sort of we feel each other out like dance battle style, where I get to see what kind of moves, you know, does Jersey have, and he's like, what kind of moves does Rob have, and our guests too. We're like feeling each other out, thinking about this song that we're immersed in, which is our topic, right? And as we get the feel for the topic, we get the groove on. We start moving and figuring it out in a general sense. But then the second part comes in. In the second part, we go way deeper into the topic, and we transcend the music. I don't know, Jersey. I'm losing it here. Help! I'm in metaphor quicksand.
Oh, and then in the end of the battle, our guest Ryan Estrada of RyanEstrada.com gives you a look. And the battle is over. There's the look. Ryan Estrada of RyanEstrada.com. Take a drink, everybody. He's back. And good to see you again, Ryan.
Yeah, I guess I'm like Beetlejuice. Like, if you mention me on the show a certain number of times, I just appear. Boop. It must be a really high number, though.
Oh, my word. I would accept you as my great gazoo if we're available.
The Flintstones. We should say, from the recently relaunched and repolished RyanEstrada.com, the site looks really good.
Oh, yeah.
But
did the whole thing.
You did the whole thing with these two hands. But you had to put some comics away on the main page because, guess what? Ryan makes too many comics.
Yeah, well, I mean, just I felt like whenever I saw people go to my site, like I'd always, like whenever I watched them, like I'd see them go over the stuff I want them to see and hover down to like the old stuff I did like 10 years ago. I'm like, don't click on that. And I'm like, if I get so upset when people click on that first, like why is that so readily available? So I made it just to click away and make sure people can see the stuff that I'm most proud of and want them to see.
Yeah, and it's a landing page. Your homepage is a landing page, which we don't talk about enough on this show, and it's something that we have talked about in the past privately, and we talked a little bit about it on one of the Lean Into Arts. You were in the chat room, I think, Ryan. You were giving me a bunch of really good advice that I have yet to implement on my personal website, but looking at that, I'm like, it's just so elegant and clean and straightforward, and it sets my expectations, and I can dig as deep as I want. I think it just seems like especially for visual storytellers, the feed look of a website, not necessarily the best way to go.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I've been thinking about that feed look for comics, and you know, a lot of comics take the whole blog approach. A blog is a great engine, but you know what? You get stuck in this weird reverse order timeline, and you know. At least when you pick up a manga, you expect it to be in reverse order and you have the entire thing. You can start conveniently flipping through. That's the correct way to flip through, right? Where a website, it's not so convenient. You've got to jump somewhere. And so this is a cool, you just start at the jump point. Here's a signpost with a lot of places to get on board, right?
That's it. Yeah, a few years ago, my site was set up as a blog post, and that does work for some people. Like if you have a certain type of thing you post regularly, like a daily whatever, you want the newest thing in front, but that's not my thing. My thing is like when I post a comic, it's going to be like a 200 page graphic novel, and then like for a year I'll be posting nothing but, you know, like I'll be posting stuff that I'm proud of, but not like this is the first thing you should see when you wonder who I am. There we go.
Let me pull up for... There's Rob holding it up on the screen. Really good. But yeah, and we should say Ryan posts amazing things all over the internet on Google+ and on Facebook and on Twitter. You can follow him at all those places. One of his recent posts was politely telling the internet to calm down over the Batman news. And the part that I love the most about that post was what I think it was the one that you posted on Tumblr where you said, like, look, I go to these conventions in Korea. You see some crazy books all mm-hmm. the time. And I'll let you make the big point. But part of that point was one of the comics you saw was a comic about Tony Stark being in love with an elf-sized Captain America.
Yeah. There's some amazing books at those cons, man. There's they have the Thor and Loki, Little Mermaid. There's a SpongeBob cast as humans boy love comic that recently got its own spinoff with SpongeBob as humans boy love babies, like the Muppet Babies version of that. And it's
wow,
just classic. And like the point that I made was that, like sure that's fan art, but basically everything that's done in superheroes is fan art right now because the people that made it aren't making it anymore. Just because they're getting paid by Warner Brothers to do it doesn't make it any less fan art. So don't freak out.
And it was a post that demonstrated your worldview. It got a reaction out of people. It was responding to something that was kind of on people's minds at the time. And that leads us to our topic. Do I need to fire off? That was kind of curveball. Do I need to fire off the topic music, the 10,000 feet up thing?
Do it.
All right, here we go. Well, talking about things. Talking about making stuff that people, or stuff that engages people, that also showcases who you are to new readers. Because if you make something that engages people, it's going to get shared. If it gets shared, how do you hope, or what do you hope to happen after it gets shared? Do you hope that they'll find out more about you, dig deeper into your archives, buy something from you? What is the conversion, as Rob likes to say, right?
Yeah, that's you know, your interactive space language, right? Where you convert someone from point A to point B, where somehow there's this membrane in between, you know, a goal that they want and then something that you want to accomplish, and that the transition is a conversion.
Right. So, Ryan, you prepared the notes for this one. You're going to blindside us. You promised to curveball the heck out of this one. So
I prepared secret notes. Yeah, well, the way this came about is that I was responding to your post, which was what you would do with the Masters of the Universe if you made the comics. And the reason that struck a chord with me is that I had just finished reading an article on Upworthy that they put together. It was like a little PowerPoint presentation called How to Make That One Thing Go Viral. And they go through a lot of points we'll talk about, but mostly just about framing your content and getting the right headline and making it so that, you know, they're saying that you can't take something that no one wants and make it viral, but you can make it easy for people to take it viral if that's where they want to take it. And I wanted to share this article because there's a lot of things in there that, like, I really, like, that I've always kind of known but never really put into words or put into practice enough. But it didn't really all click together for me. Like, there was, it didn't really seem to fit what I wanted to do with my sharing. And then the very next thing I read was yours. And I realized the difference in that yours, you weren't just finding the best way to highlight this content, you're finding the best way to highlight yourself. Because, like, if I want to do what Upworthy does and just, like, find a cute cat video that hasn't gotten a lot of hits and make a good joke that makes it go viral, you can do that. But no one that sees it will ever care who I am. Whereas, like, when I look at your Masters of the Universe post, that's, like, 100% pure, uncut Jersey. It's just, like, you look at that, you know who Jersey is. You're a cartoonist, what kind of comics you love, what inspire you, what you make, what you want to make. And that's like you read that post, you can see your enthusiasm just encapsulates who you are. And like, if anyone ever wants to, like, you know, like whenever the topic of all ages comics come up, like I want to, like I mentioned you, but like if I want to, There's just this one post that, like, before that I could be like, okay, if you go to these three podcasts and watch enough episodes and watch these and you'll get, like, you put this together and you see the enthusiasm he has for this type of comics, but now you can just point to that and be like, just read that, that's Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to throw in on this is that this happened entirely by accident. When I posted it, I'd figured out what it was going to be and what its potential had. But when it started, as I talked about in the very last episode of the Leanitire cast, it started as just a thing I did for fun. And then as I worked on it, I saw the potential growing with the thing. But yeah, Ryan, you were the one person who picked up on what I was really going for with, I'm going to make a thing that showcases who I am as a cartoonist, and I'm going to build in some features that encourage people to share this around, not just because they like it, but also I put in the original pencils, high-res pencils, the high-res inks, the high-res color version, and said, hey, this is Creative Commons, the artwork. I can't license the characters because they're not mine, but I can license the artwork under Creative Commons, non-commercial, share-alike. So if you make something with this, and please do, link back to this post to encourage more sharing and get more people pointed at this thing that says, here's the Jersey Drows showroom, as it were, right? But it didn't come at the top. It wasn't like, I'm going to sit down and make a viral today.
Yeah. I'm going to make a viral today. But at the same time, there was a progression, right, where you knew that you were sitting on something that had bottled some excitement.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you were getting some early reactions as you were sharing this sort of the prototypes, if you will, of the post of what would become, because you were sharing like snippets of the work in progress and all that kind of stuff.
That's true.
Could you see yourself doing that on purpose? Isn't that kind of part of the premise of this episode to say, we may want to have, 100% pure uncut Ryan Estrada, maybe I want to post a 100% pure uncut Rob Stenzinger somewhere. Right.
Yeah.
Intentionally.
Well, I think where the intention comes in is within the framing. That's what most of that article I mentioned, on Upworthy is about, is that like the content, if you're specifically making something to go viral, it's probably not going to go viral. But if you have something that you like and you frame it properly, and what that means is that, like, it talks about the Kevin Bacon effect. Like, when you post something, the people that already follow you, they're going to check it out. But if you want more people to see it, you need to think about what their friends are going to think about it and what their friends' friends are going to think about it. And, like, too often, artists are afraid to, like, add too much context to their work because they're, it feels awkward. Like, these people already know what I'm doing. And, like, early on, I'd post a lot of stuff, just post a random page of something that you've been working on without any context. But, now what I try to, when you go to my site, if you click on one of my books, Oculiance, I have the whole book there with the cover and introduction to it. So you can just share that and not have to worry about, like, hey, check this page 98 of this thing out, and then go back to the archives and see what it's all about.
What does that context do for you and for the person that comes to see it?
What you want context to do is make something that is standalone. Like, there's a lot of things that I love that my friends have done, but if I link to it, it's not going to make any sense to anyone that doesn't already follow their work.
And so somehow that individual thing, you're saying like the context lets it just like stand alone. Like, what is it? What is a community? I'm not trying to be totally dumb here, but I need to figure this out. Right. Where,
for example,
what is the essence of standing alone?
Yeah. Like Jersey's post. If he just did a post that said, hey, remember those He-Man things I did? This is what the cover would look like. Like, people would share that because it's it's a cool cover. But when their friends look at it, they'd be like, "What post? What are you talking about?" And it's not going to have any context whatsoever. But by introducing it and saying, "This is what I would make. This is what would be in it," he's just making a post that anyone off the street could come to and completely understand.
Right. So is it the difference between hey, you already know me, I don't have to explain this joke or this thing.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of casual sense to go from that to saying, you know what? I want you to get to know me. Is it?
Yeah.
Is that the difference?
Yeah, like we talked before about when I got like a million followers on Google Plus. Not that it matters now because none of them use Google Plus anymore. But when that happened, the reason I think it happened was completely by accident because it was a new network. I was being followed by new people. I started posting stuff as though I was introducing myself to new people. And because of that, it was much easier to share and much easier for people to like grab onto it. And it just all went crazy viral. And that's what I need to start doing more of everywhere, you know, because like for me, I think my equivalent of that post was when I did the how to travel anywhere on $20 a day or learn to read Korean in 15 minutes. Because it, you know, same thing with me. Like I, like all the things I posted were so completely different from each other and didn't really like to kind of get who I was. You'd have to like read a bunch of things like, oh, look over here. Oh, he makes comics and look over here. Oh, he travels a lot. He blogs about his things. He makes videos about the places he travels. But both of those so like kind of encapsulated who I was. I'm a person who likes to travel, share things about the things that I've experienced, and make comics. And both of those, like, the proof that I know this works is that when I made the Learn Korean in 15 Minutes comic, like, I made that, I did not in any way expect that to go viral. I didn't think anyone would want to learn Korean, so I didn't even bother putting my name on it. And it went crazy viral to millions and millions of people without my name on it, and still I get, like, an email every day from people who are like, oh, I wonder who made this. Let me do some Google image searching and track it down.
Wow. So we've talked about that in the past too, is that part of what made that hook is that it was also something that helps people. Here's a thing that you can immediately put to use. And I've heard somebody else say somewhere, I forget who it was, but they said, you know, people are more eager to spend money on something that will make them money. In other words, something that like where the benefit is so clear. Yeah. And learn to read Korean in 15 minutes, there's like a really nice encapsulated value proposition there. I'm going to benefit by looking at this thing today, right? Whereas cat video, it's going to give me a chuckle, but the value is much more squishy, right? But I love this idea of like this idea of contextualizing every post. Cause yeah, one of the things you said to me, Ryan, when I posted that thing is you said, hey, how come you don't have a gallery of all of your past redesigns in there? You've got links to all the past redesigns, but a gallery is so much more clickable and it's easier to rifle through. And then they can dig deeper to actually read the notes on each of these character redesigns that you did. Right. Propping it up to make it as, it's not something, I'll ask you guys, do you think this is something you should do with every post, or is this something that you should do once in a while when you feel it's the right kind of material?
Well, I think, like, you know, you don't have to completely give context of everything you've ever done in every post, but you should write a post in a way that isn't, like, referencing old things that, you know, like, or making in-jokes. And then in something like that that requires or would be a advanced by context of older posts, add it in. Just something to think about it. And like the thing to remember is that every post you make is the first post someone sees. So just think about that. Like whenever I share stuff, like I post to different networks differently. Like when I post on Google Plus, I always post as though I'm introducing myself to someone new because I always have new followers. When I post to Twitter, I assume that people who follow me on Twitter already follow my stuff because there's no way to add context in 140 characters. So I introduce it differently. And then on Facebook, I'm always writing as though I'm writing to my mother or a relative who doesn't really get what I do. But like, so, but I'm still doing the same thing. I'm adding some kind of context to present myself so that people who don't know the entirety of what I've done can follow it.
What about Tumblr? What are you thinking about when you post there?
When I post in Tumblr, I try to make everything as simple and standalone as possible. Like I don't want to add a bunch of notes because it's harder to share stuff if it's not short on Tumblr. So I just try to make it simple and not require previous knowledge. Rather than add knowledge, rather than add context, I try and make it as short of context necessary as possible.
One of the things they talked about in that Upworthy post that you linked us to, and we'll link to it in the show notes at leanintoart.com, and I've been trying to screen share it this whole time, but my screen share isn't working today, Rob. I don't know if you can pull it up or not, but one of the things they talk about in there is building the headline, and there's a specific use case that they're talking about, like you talked about cat videos and stuff, but one of the things they talked about that I thought was that really kind of hit me in the middle of the forehead was they write 25 headlines for every article they post.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
I don't know if you could talk about that. Is that something you've played around with too, or is it something where, because like you're when you talked about Tumblr, you talked about making it short, and so you know I'm reminded of that line, and I think it was attributed to Abraham Lincoln, where, or maybe it was Mark Twain, I can't remember, but it's like I didn't have time to write you a short letter, so I wrote you a long one, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The example they gave, the first one that they realized the importance of this was there was a video called Zach Walls Speaks About Family that had it was doing okay. It had a million views, but it was like this really touching speech this guy gave about growing up in a same-sex family. But Zach Walls Speaks About Family is not the most compelling headline in the world, and it never went crazy viral. And then they reposted it with the title, Two Lesbians Raised a Baby and This is What They Got. And all of a sudden, within a few days, it had 17 million views. Just because that's a headline that grabbed people. Like, that no matter what side of the view they were on, one of the things they talk about is the curiosity, what do they call it? The curiosity gap. You want something that isn't so vague, you know. Blank talks about family is way too vague. I have no idea who that guy is. I have no idea what he's saying about family. I'm not going to click on that. But if they say, this person says this and this and this, I have no reason to click on that because they already told me. But if you see something that's been debated a lot and say, this is what happened, people who are for same-sex families are going to click on that, and people who are against same-sex families are going to click on that because it creates that level of curiosity. And that's another reason I think that Learn to Read Korean in 15 Minutes and Travel Anywhere in $20 a Day went so viral, is that I didn't just say learn to travel cheap or learn to read Korean, because that, you know, there's so many things that offer, you know, that try to teach that, but I was very specific in a way that makes you think, you can't do that. Let me see what this crazy guy is talking about.
Right. And one of the things they talk about in that Upworthy presentation as well is they say, like, have a story arc or a villain or a hero, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, in the cases that you were talking about, your post, there's, like, sort of like an I dare you to believe that you can't. Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to prove to you that you can. I'm going to propose something preposterous, and I'm going to show you how it's done, which gets somebody to say, you know, oh no, you can't, like you said. But in those other cases, yeah, you're challenging people with different positions to pick a side, and it's not to cause a fight. It's more to like elicit an emotion. That was one of the slides that stuck out for me. I grabbed this slide, and we can
which
put
one,
it,
Jersey?
Again in the show notes. Why the hell do people share? And then it says, you know, there's like an axis from top to bottom. Axis is anger and sadness. And then the other axis from left to right. Oh, Rob pulled it up for us. Gosh, you're awesome, Rob. And then you've got relaxation to happiness. And you want to elicit those emotions, right? Like what makes something shareable is what get them emotionally engaged.
Mm-hmm.
But does that mean?
Yeah, going back to the He-Man example, like that, a lot of people have been complaining about the recent He-Man comics and how they turned it dark and added beheadings and women in their underwear for no reason. And yours is kind of like this is what it could be. And it kind of elicits that from people.
Yeah, it's an aspirational post where, but it did cause, I mean, it was shared thousands of times, not nearly as many times as say the How to Learn Korean in 15 Minutes, but it got shared around on like He-Man.org and like the big sites where people read about He-Man stuff. And most of the responses were very positive. Even the people were like, oh, I wouldn't like a kid's comic, but the art's nice. So awesome. Thank you, Internet. I can't believe how polite you guys were about it. But there were a couple people who were like, no, never, you know, never make it for kids. It's for grownups, man. And the cool thing was, is I got them to talk about it. I wasn't trying to get them fired, like, you know, irate, but it got people discussing the state of what's the proper way to do He-Man. At least got people looking at the thing, right?
Yeah.
It, well, a note I took as we've been chatting here, really, and this is probably related to, you know, me seeing things as a conversion funnel, right? Which is, that's just a mental model to consider. Like if you have the cone of a funnel where up at the top, you are, starting to capture, people's attention and then, you know, slowly but surely bring them closer toward a goal. And then you may, this is where the metaphor of the funnel actually breaks down pretty badly, but it's assumed that like at each stage down it closer toward your goal, you're probably, there's a shedding or an attrition of some of the people that are in the funnel, right? There's fewer and fewer that are toward that you know, threshold you're going toward. Anyway, there's two of these stages that are really standing out to me. There's like this attraction stage and then a connection stage that, you know, it's like you're attracting based on a desire for you know, people to gain benefit from your helpfulness or usefulness or the, you know, the, like a utility of something they want to learn about. And it's also like the feeling aspect of that attraction where it could be just connecting with your passion on a topic or the aesthetic beauty to say like, well, I mean, that scene is very beautiful, Jersey. I mean, you have these attractively designed characters in this exciting pose. So, I mean, there's just like turtles all the way down as far as the amount of passion going on in all that. That's attractive. But then there's the connection stage where that's what Ryan may, I don't know, let's just test to see if this holds any water. But that connection stage is when you have to have some context, right? And Jersey's article, you have that. I notice, I'm like, holy moly, if people didn't know, like, well, you've been actually working on these designs for a couple years or so, right? Mm-hmm. You connect to all those posts and whatnot. So and all of a sudden it takes on this bigger story, this bigger awareness, which is in some ways additional connection and context to say, like, you kind of have it conveys trust, like you've been working on this for a long time, maybe a little bit of topic authority because of this volume of work and dedication. More chance for people to relate to it. And then, but then a lot of times there'd be that next action, right? So now, boom, right? Buy the poster. Now do that.
But what works about that is that because he presented it that way and because it's so close to what Jersey does and is passionate about, you can get to the end of that post and someone can think, man, I wish I could read that comic, and then look just to the right and see the posters of the comics he has made and be like, oh, I can't read this exact comic, but it looks like this is the type of thing that he makes. And they know who you are now. Like, if you had done a post just as engaging about, I don't know, complaining about the service you got at the post office, people will respond to it and people will share it if they had a bad experience at the post office too, but they don't care who made it.
Right.
Like you were talking about that funnel, the way I look at it is when they're going through the funnel, you have a number of goals that you want them to pass. And like the five goals would basically be, number one, you make a stranger want to read it. Number two, you make a stranger want to share it. Number three, you make a stranger want to know who made it. Then you make strangers feel that they know who made it. And then you want to make strangers remember it. Because like I said with the cat video example, people are going to look at it. People are going to share it. They can look at your name. They will never remember it. And they will never care. But when it relates to what you do and shows a passion or an expertise or a knowledge of a thing, they're going to wonder what else you have to say. and they're going to follow you. They're going to remember you if that's what they are also interested or passionate in.
Yeah.
That's cool. So let me see if I caught that right, Ryan. So, and this is almost like the Ryan Estrada conversion funnel, which is making a stranger want to read it is like that first stage. The second stage is making them want to share it. And then the third stage is making the stranger want to know who's behind this thing, want to know the person. And then the fourth stage would be to feel connected, right? So maybe like some kind of sense of bond shared ownership of that.
Yeah, just make them feel that they know who made it, and that, like, you know, when I read that post by Jersey, I know who he is. When you read Travel Anywhere and $20 a Day, you know who I am. Like, when you look at Dean Tripp's You'll Be Safe Here art, you get a feeling of who Dean Tripp is.
Yep.
And then
your last date, the fifth one being to remember, right?
Yeah.
So now you're like, I know where to go and where to tell anyone where to go to get this kind of thing. We've mentioned that the let's see, Dean Tripp's art, the You'll Be Safe Here. Was there any similar sort of event behind that art when it got shared?
Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? It blew up because Will Wheaton reshared it, and yeah, it took off, and he started selling prints, and yeah, it became a really big deal. Cool. That was a true viral, and again, that was something where he didn't plan it. Just he worked really hard on the piece, and then shared it because he was proud of it, and it just got passed around a lot.
Yeah. Now, once again, most of the things that work for artists are completely by accident. Because like you said, this is Ryan Estrada's theory. This is my theory that I made up in writing notes for the show. This isn't how I work.
Right. No, I'm actually going to formalize it and make a viral poster. Actually, that's my intent.
There you go.
I think it's useful. It's not to say like this is the concrete perfect recipe or whatnot, but like capturing that, your model of it at this moment in time, I think it's that's an interesting thing to explore. And then I when I look at that and I kind of take the different pieces apart, I think I can relate to certain portions and make my own version of that funnel that would fit like if I was trying to when I start sharing things related to the current game I'm working on. I don't know. I mean, maybe I would borrow it wholesale. I think you could start off a lot worse than that. But
And then even if you know the next step is, you know, once you go down that funnel, you want to get people to go right. You want to make it into an hourglass shape and get them to right go back out. Like, you want to follow up and have it so that, you know, like I said, when you get to the end of Jersey's post, you see right at the bottom, here's the other comics that I make. And like, when people read my stuff, I want them to go to my site and see, like in the redesign, I really wanted to push more on the fact that the artist adventurer title that I give myself. And that's why I put at the bottom the context of all the places I've traveled, have it right under my travel videos. You want it so that if I'm going to prove with one post to people that I am a person who loves traveling the world, making comics about it, and hopefully in a helpful way, when they click my site, I want them to see something that's helpful about the world and places I've traveled.
Yeah, well, that makes it specific about you. It's not just you're saying, I have designed these words and images put together in an attractive way. There's something greater to this as far as me as a creator. Like, I produce this kind of thing, but I'm also this kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're working on?
Yeah. I'm just saying that if you try hard to be that type of person, make it easy for people to find those things that you make.
Cool. I got a question for you guys in terms, we're talking about salesmanship, we're talking about selling yourself, and I think those are the words you used, Ryan, when you were responding to me on Twitter, as you said, creating a post that excites people to share and sells the you-ness of it, or words to that effect. There's an art to that. I'm going to devil advocate here and think about the person says, well, then all I got to do if I want to sell me is fire off some selfies of me next to a thing I like. I got it. Right? Here's me. Here's the thing I like. And I've encapsulated it. Right? Are we talking about rampant egotism? Or are we talking about something else here?
Yeah, I don't think that I would never see a selfie next to a thing and want to click on it or know who the person is. But like it feels so creepy. Like, you know, we come in here and talk about selling yourself, but when I actually sit to do it, like, it feels really creepy to do it. But like, that's one of the things in the Upworthy thing is like, you're not creepy. Don't worry. But like, I just like to make things, but in order to get people to read them or get funding to make them or get opportunities to make more things, like, I need people to see the stuff that I make. And that's just kind of like a thing that I'd like to say it's a thing that I think about before I do it, but even no matter how many times I've been in the show, it's a thing that I do and then post-rationalize when I come in the show and realize it and then forget about it the next time I do a thing, but post-rationalize it again.
Well, that just means we need to have you on more often.
There you go.
Gotta make that loop more frequent, and then you're set.
Yeah.
Well, here's another blatant devil's advocate thing. But okay, so there as artists, we can have discomfort with, you know, like, I'd hypothesize we're really attracted to the idea of making things that we believe in and love, and then sharing that. But then the sharing that is a secondary thing. I'm guessing we get a lot of satisfaction out of the bringing it into existence. Mm-hmm. The sharing it, though, is okay, so let's say I start trying some of this advice, and we've got this interesting conversion funnel and this Upworthy post, and I start writing 25 headlines for every darn thing I start trying to post, and I'm figuring it out. Like, I'm getting people attracted, and then I'm finding a way to hook or connect them. But to me, like, at where do I start to? Where's the point where I've gone too far away from the original thing I made just to draw attention to the thing I made?
Yeah. Well, if you get too far, you're not going to do any of those steps because you're going to disappoint people. They're going to click on, that's not what I thought it was, and immediately close it, not even read the whole thing. So it's just, as long as you have something that gets people excited about the thing that you've made and not gets people excited about a non-existent thing, I think you're all right.
Well, and then what I just described reminds me of, and this may be a little bit too naughty for the show, I will keep it PG, but like, do you guys recall in the early-ish, as the internet was coming into its own and getting very popular, a lot of sites would have a misspelling and they would be a totally different kind of business. Often, like, I mean, maybe, let's see, risque or naughty or porn, right? Like, Microsoft without the T, right? Whatever. There was all these domains, right? And so it's like, I'm attracting attention, associating myself with a thing, and then surprise, it's something different, right? That I'm saying, like, what, because honestly, in some ways, isn't that what Upworthy does? They're going so far skewed from what the original post is. And if you look at it, like, they're not like being Wikipedia with a headline. They're being evocative in a way that doesn't necessarily represent the original topic, right?
Maybe you're looking at different Upworthy posts than I am, but all the ones I've read seem to relate to the video at hand.
They touch on this in the actual slide deck too, is they say, is this manipulation? Yeah. And they say, yeah, it is. And then they throw back at you, is they say, well, look at it this way. Do you want 100 people to look at this or 10,000 people to look at this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like, there's like, let me find one of the examples that they used here.
Well, okay. So slide number 16, I think their pithiness and they write headlines that are incredibly tight, right? So, okay, now I'm screwing up my devil's advocate stance by complimenting them, but like what can I do? So, for instance, you have September 5th, 2012, Mitt Romney accidentally confronts a gay veteran. Awesomeness ensues.
Mm-hmm.
October 2nd, 2012, bully calls news anchor fat. News anchor destroys him on live TV. You know, it's like it's amplified. Like there is a drama getting added to the facts.
Yeah.
And how far can you push that? And is that I don't know. Maybe this is a silly path to take.
No, I think it's what it's called is a squishy question, which is an interesting question. So I don't know if there's an answer to it, but I'd love to see if it's beat at this thing a little bit like a pinata.
Yeah, well, I mean, like if they were like straight up lying by saying Mitt Romney has a gay rendezvous at a diner, right. Like technically that's true. He did have a rendezvous with a gay person, but you're blatantly tricking people into clicking a link. Right. But what they're just saying is, this is what happened. It was freaking amazing. Like, that's just, they're saying it's amazing. That's their opinion. So I say, okay, let's see what my opinion on this link
Very
is.
True. So maybe it's, I'm not, yeah, it's tough. I it doesn't seem like they're really, okay, so let's, well, shoot. How about, well, using the emotional keywords and also euphemisms? Like, when have we hidden a little too much of the original thing? Right? Like, I made this post, and this is crazy difficult. So now, like, I have this other devil's advocate angle to say, okay, so it's okay. Like, let's assume it's all right to... you know, emotionally amplify this thing you're trying to draw attention to, but that is crazy hard to do, right? Yeah. So I don't care if you're proud of what you made and think it's one of the best things you ever made. Go ahead and summarize that in a headline, right? When you're the one who made it.
Yeah.
Because one of the advantages these people have is they're typically promoting something someone else made.
Yeah. And like you don't need to think like as in depth as they do to make a difference in how people look at your work. Like just the difference between like whenever a lot of cartoonists, like when they post new comics, it's like new comic link. Whereas I'll click that because I read the comic, but I'm not going to share that because that doesn't, you know, I'll have to write my own headline in order to share it with other people. But whereas like if it... like the one another thing that's being shared around right now is that Bill Watterson quote that was turned into a comic.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You see that posted with like every time I see it, it's a different headline. Like check out what Bill Watterson said about living as an artist, or learn how to live, you know, learn the way you could live your life, or just different ways to say it. But if it's posted as here's my new comic, no one's going to click on it. And like, there's a lot of comics that I read that I don't bother clicking for a while because it doesn't grab my attention. I'll catch up later. Whereas a comic that I've never read before will have just the simplest text describing what the comic's about with that little curiosity gap. You know, they don't tell me the punchline, but they'll have that little curiosity gap of what the topic of this comic is. And I'll be like, oh, I wonder where that goes. And I'll click it. And then I'll find myself back reading through the archives just because they took the time to be like, what is interesting about this comic? And even if they don't phrase it in the most amazing way that, like, you don't have to say, like, I always joke about, I'm trying to get a job right now writing for Cracked, and I've been reading all the headlines, and I noticed, like, even a day after they post it, they'll change the headline. And eventually, like, all the headlines end up having either that you won't believe, mind-blowing, or shocking. Like, they all end up with that in there. Like, you don't need to have mind-blowing in every post, but just tell me what's in the post and not just, check out this post, bro.
There's words on the internet at this link.
No, okay, so I see where you're going with your devil's advocate bit, Rob, because I just posted about this like privately on, I forget, one of those network things, and because I watched network TV for the first time in a long time. And like, while I try not to be one of those annoying cord cutters who go, I don't watch broadcast TV, I don't, but I remember why, because I watched broadcast TV again. I saw network local news where every story began with, are people trying to break into your house? Five at Five is on your side, and we're going to do an expose on people trying to break into your house. Is the dentist trying to rip you off? We've sent out secret cameras to these five different, you know, dentist offices to protect you, and you better stick around to find out how you could be getting screwed. And I was just blasted with fear. You know, it's like, here's like 16 things you should be afraid of right now, and you better watch to find out how to not be afraid. I can totally see, because I was offended by it. I was like, man, this is just the crudest psychological play that you're going for here. I could totally see why you wouldn't want to do that. But there's a difference between saying, are you afraid? No. Well, you should be, and here's why. And saying, here's something that is exciting. I'm excited. There's a difference between me going, like, everybody run, and me going, oh my gosh, you're never going to believe what happened to me today, right? Mm-hmm. Am I going somewhere with this?
Yeah, well, like I said before, when I read this article, a lot of things didn't click with me. Like, not that I think they went very manipulative with their headlines, but, like, they tend to more than I would. And also, like, when the later stage, and they talk about having the pop-ups that tell you to share and beg you to share, those are like, I hate when I go to something Upworthy and it pops up. Like, completely turns me off. But that's one of those differences when I talked about when you're trying to make, you know, theirs was make that one thing go viral. And every artist who wants a career, their goal is to make themselves go viral. Where when you're just worried about that one thing, you can be as pushy as you want, because if you turn them off, they're not going to remember who you are when you try to make another thing go viral. Your only goal is to get people looking at it. But if your goal is to get people go through that funnel, look at the thing, wonder who made it, and care about who made it, then if you turn them off, you turn them off on every one of these levels, the thing, the you, the who you are, and they're going to remember, oh, that's that dick who tricked me with the other thing, you know, and...
Yeah, you've cut off the longer term relationship then.
Yeah. So you want, like, you know, like you were saying, you want something that tells you what the content is about and leaves a curiosity gap, but you don't want to say this comic is about safety, so you better read it or you're gonna die.
Yeah, you can play the delightful card instead of, you know, you can go for the happiness over the anger and approach, right? Where one thing you're reminding me of some of the tactics I used to use, because I was the guy for quite a few episodes when I was regularly updating Art Geek Zoo a couple years ago. I was the I made a comic link guy. Yeah. And then I would notice that, but since I'm also a user experience person, I would track the stats and saw on what got clicked wherever I posted a notice about it. And I started to experiment with, especially once I started to feel more confident with my writing, I would do something my own reaction to the comic that mattered to me but basically where it was part of the service of delivering the comic, where that I'm just trying to add another joke. It's more content, right? I'm like, here's, you know, there's a punchline, there's something to discover, I want to entice, and I want you to, you know, solve this mystery, you know, like there's the, you know, to be continued right after this link, and all you got to do is click it. To find out how awkward when one person in the band starts to showboat and the others don't know what to say, right? Yeah. And it's like, well, that's the kind of thing I would try to break into a tweet as, for example. Mm-hmm. And it did, it made a difference. But yeah, I think we have an easier card to play in that realm because,
yeah. So I guess to use an example that we're talking about, like if you picture there's three levels of what, like a headline that you would want, like the, to use my Learn to Read Korean 15 minutes thing, as an example, like you could have, learn Korean, and no one's going to click on that because that you know I'm way too vague. Or here, learn something. Or here's a new comic. Sure. All of these are at this level where there's no you know no curiosity gap. Sure. At the other spectrum, I could say, here's what you need to know when the North Koreans take over. Mm. And people would click that, but they'd be like, this is dumb. And not care because it's completely misleading.
He made me scared, but he's just being funny. Now I don't know what to make of this.
Yeah, but you know, people would click on it, but they're not going to care who I am, and they're not going to care what the content actually is. Whereas in the middle, if you say learn to read Korean in 15 minutes, you're giving them a reason to click, telling them what will happen when they click, and creating curiosity about what happens when they click without giving everything away.
Curiosity.
Mm-hmm. And there's another example they did in the Upworthy article where they had two different people post the same thing different ways about the monkey thing. Let me see where it was.
That's where they say to always be measuring and comparing, right? Or no, social headlines need a curiosity gap?
No, they posted the same video. It was about the monkey. They paid the two monkeys differently with – one got grapes yep. and the
other got... That's, yeah, slide 25, the case of the clever monkeys. Mm-hmm. And the one headline says, remember planet up... man, this is an yeah. unwieldy thing. Because in the image, they have sort of an annotation that's, that has a monkey speaking to another monkey, Planet of the Apes, whatever, characters, going about that raise. And then the headline says, remember Planet of the Apes? It's closer to reality than you think. And that had 8,000 page views, whereas the other one said just this headline, and the image is just a couple of like maybe monkeys in a lab or in a zoo in a couple cages. It goes, headline, two monkeys were paid unequally. See what happens next. Mm-hmm. 474,000 page views.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the one on the left is kind of what you were talking about. That's so far from the actual content that it's misleading, and the picture has nothing to do with the video. So people are going to click that and be completely disappointed and not want to click anything else you share. Whereas this, like I clicked that immediately, and before I even realized that you could click things in this article to go to the actual article. Like I'm like, oh, I'm Googling this right now. I need to see this video. Because I want to know what happens when you pay monkeys unequally. And that video totally showed me. By the way, if you're watching, you should go watch.
I am crazy curious now, but I'm busy doing a podcast. So
let's all take a break.
It's amazing. It's no, hilarious.
Another thing I wanted to layer onto this is you were talking about that Bill Watterson comic, which, by the way, we will link in the show notes. I found the link. It's at zenpencils.com. But I just did a quick search on Twitter to see who's talking about this. And a lot of people are talking about this comic. And what are they saying? Are they saying this Bill Watterson speech will terrify you, or you're not going to believe what this Bill Watterson speech actually says? No, this is actually, and this was, again, in the Upworthy article or slide deck, was aspirational things, eliciting a hopeful emotion, because all these people are saying, like, words of wisdom from Bill Watterson, forget the norm, invent your own life, right? Yeah. And that's getting retweeted. Oh, wow. Or pulling a quote from it, creating a life that reflects your values and satisfies your soul is a rare achievement, Bill Watterson, link yeah. to the thing. So
yeah, like,
this
one, like, if you want to do the scare thing, you could be like, Bill Watterson hates the way you live your life. But that's not a
He does. I didn't know that. That
now,
makes me sad.
Now I want to know, why is he so mean? And yeah. What did I do? So it can work, right? But yeah, that, let's see. So,
you know who's good at this is R. Stevens with his Diesel Sweeties comic. When he posts on Google Plus, when he posts the links, and he does the thing that where he just posts the link to it, so it has that horrible preview image on Google Plus that I really don't like. And so I rarely click anything where somebody just like types a few words and posts a link. But he always writes such a fun little concise summary of the gist of the comic, not a TV Guide log line, but like almost a haiku about what the meaning of today's comic is. And I don't even follow these. I don't subscribe to the RSS feed, but every time he posts, I click it because he writes something that invites my curiosity that way. Mm-hmm. So everybody should follow him on Google Plus to see how he does it.
Hmm. Nice.
Was there anything else philosophical? We got to get to talking about the quests pretty soon. We've already been going 55 minutes. Man, this goes fast.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, Ryan, what? Where else did we want to go with this?
Well, I think just the things to remember are frame your work properly and think about the Kevin Bacon effect, as they call it. Like, think about what's going to happen when my mom reads this. What's going to happen when some stranger who my friend's linking to reads this? And just, you don't want to like pretend like you've never met anyone before, but just like phrase your stuff in a way that a stranger could look at it and want to click or want to share.
That's good. And think about the different networks and where you are too. Mm-hmm. This is something you and I have talked about in the past, Ryan, is this whole like swimming with the natives thing. Learn the native language and find and understand who's there. Because one of the things the Upworthy post says is basically they make a case that says it's Facebook or nothing. You know, if you want to get something shared, you got to get it shared on Facebook. But there's other places too, right? Like one of the things that came out of that He-Man post that I did is I got this huge uptick, not huge, but I got an uptick in Instagram followers. Of all things, because I was posting the progress on Instagram and it was getting passed around quite a bit, or more than usual. Whereas I didn't see that kind of traction on Facebook, right? Mm-hmm. But now that I think about the way I share stuff on Instagram, it's usually like, I just did a post today where it was like, run, NASGAR. That's all it said. And it was NASGAR from RoboForce running away from Max Zero of RoboForce. I provided no context. You had to know who Max Zero is in order to get what that was about. And now that I think about it, I could have done that better.
Yeah, well, but people who do know who that is, they're going to click on it.
Yeah, right. So, very cool. Okay, well, I'm going to give Ryan the opportunity to bug out if you want, because we're going to talk about the quests for this episode.
I'll listen in.
Will you? Okay.
Right. Then feel free to comment and chime in. You're a full panelist here, and whatever. We're not going to exclude you then. So please chime away.
So we should say also for folks who, if anybody else is bugging out at this point, we are going to talk about quests, and it is going to be pretty awesome. But Ryan Estrada, RyanEstrada.com, Ryan Estrada on Twitter. RyanEstrada.com on Tumblr, right?
Yeah, spelled out. If you go to RyanEstrada.com, there's all the little buttons at the bottom.
That's right.
That'll help you cross it out.
Easy peasy. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and hit the quest music. Rob, there is no way we're going to get through all of them. We can't. We just can't. There's too many entries.
What? We'll do a sampling. Do a sampling, and we can talk about it in general and whatnot. This is it's interesting. Like this, what happened here was with Lena Tuart quest number 8. Here we go. Had a hypothesis. We thought, what if the quests, we found a way to make them really, truly, definitely, for sure, bite sized. We hope because. What we realized we were building as a game, in a way, was essentially a series of boss battles where we really just wanted to beat up a few minions, you know? Nothing too big. Just, you know, get loosened up before your art day or take a break and have it, you know, face some interesting question or challenge or fun exercise like you would encounter in a cool magazine or something, right? And it turns out all the other quests were, you know, again, more boss battle-like than battling a little grunt or something in a video game, so to speak. But so what we had here was framed up as a series of 11 quest cards. that each of them has its own scenario and then like a visual challenge based, you know, to paired with that scenario. Things like doodle a quick character for each of the shapes below, label or note each to rank them from most friendly to least friendly. And then there's a square, a triangle, and a circle above four or three panels, essentially, that you would, you know, doodle a character inside. And then that's the challenge being presented. And the whole approach to it is, well, you print it out or you download this challenge card. And, well, turns out it's like the size of a piece of, you know, regular paper. And that should scale for wherever you are in the world, I would hope. You print it out or put it into your favorite app, get ready to time yourself, and then start the timer. Do the challenge. And then, you know, we have a little guide for points as a way to encourage you to keep this fast. And each of them had the same point scale. So if you did it in under 2 minutes, boom, 200 points. Did it under 5 minutes, 100 points. Took you longer than 5 minutes, that's cool. You got it done. I bet it's nice. That's awesome. But only 25 points. There you go. And overall, I think that I've got a lot of, you know, observations and feelings on it. I want to, you know, chew through and whatnot to try to refine. But I think based on our participation, it seems like it went fairly well.
We had a handful of people participate, and everybody who participated did a lot of them, which is awesome. I don't know how many we got total, but it's quite a few. But Ashley Knapp is back. Control Alt Lee on Twitter. She's mm-hmm. always playing around with the quests, and there is one in particular that we got to talk about. And I marked it in the rundown because I love it, love it, love it. John Blau, he not only participated, but he had his kids participate with him, so he turned in the most. And then we got a new participant, Dudrius Maximus on Twitter, or Dudrius on Twitter, Doudrius. But and then I turned in like a really crummy one today, but I got 200 or 100 points because I did it in 2 minutes. You want to talk about Ashley's first?
Yeah, and I'm trying to pull it up. Can you speak to it to kick it off?
If you want to pull it up and screen share it, I'll lock your screen so we can look at it if you can. But what I love about it is that, you know, when you take a square, a triangle, and a circle, and if I use this in my classrooms all the time, saying, like, which one is the nice shape, which one is the scary shape, which one is the strong shape, we make assumptions about that,
I can't pull it up, Jersey. Sorry.
Oh, you can't? Oh, that's okay.
Bandwidth issues on my side.
Well, we'll look it up. We'll link to it in the show notes. But so you take... There's some hard baked in assumptions with those three shapes, and it's a case I make in my classrooms. Like, you take a triangle, we tend to think of dangerous things or dynamic things, right? Because triangles make us think of teeth, pointy things. Triangles are also not stable, so they're dynamic. Whereas a square is stable, a square is strong, a square is trustworthy. Circles make us think of smooth babies and you know, cute things like puppies and stuff. And what Ashley did is she defied our expectations a little bit because she took the square and made a stoic man. He's not a strong man, but he's introverted. He's not grumpy. He's introverted. And she used a lot of square shapes in the construction of his head, of his torso, in the accessories he's carrying. But then the triangle, she went more in the dynamic range and went towards just she's really happy. You know, like I thought for sure, and I did this myself, you know, everybody was going to point the triangle down and turn it into like an evil character or something. Oh, Rob's pulling it up on his iPad. Awesome. Low frills way of doing it. There we go. So Ashley used a bunch of up-pointing triangles and even rendered the hands as triangles, which gives it, you know, the whole design of the girl is just dynamism and upward pointing, right? Cheerful. And then the squirrel, she used all these loopy, round shapes to create this soft, cuddly squirrel. She says, the squirrel looks ready to kick my butt, even if he is deadly fluffy. Girl looks super happy to see me. Square is like mourning. He's not grumpy. He's introverted. Anyway, yeah, she only got 25 points because it took her 6 minutes to do it. But what she did, I thought was really cool. And it totally defied what I thought people were going to do with it. So she gets an extra 500 points from me for that.
Yeah, that was cool. And see, that's part of the experiment. That's one of the weaknesses of the exercise where, right, this was, she, yeah. These are both fun characters, and she had some really great analysis too, where it's like, maybe there's like an analysis bonus, whatever. We're fine tuning the game, right, as we go along. Right. So, very cool. Yeah, I noticed John Blow. He actually Blau.
You know, I know him personally, and yeah. I never asked how to pronounce his name. I'm sorry, John. I'm a jerk, but it's a Bleau. John_Bleau on Twitter.
I noticed from some of his posts. So for all of this, we will have a link in the show notes as well, but you can actually go to twitter.com and do a search with the hashtag. This is part of the design of the Quest, is that we do a hashtag with, you know, Lia Quest, L-I-A Quest, then the Quest number. In this case, Lia Quest 8, and then you'll see all the activity, all the entries and whatnot. And so, yeah, for John, he actually shared this with his kids too, with, you know, and they did a bunch of fun things with these. So, yep. And there was, yeah, Dudrius Maximus, and, Jersey did one. And then like just before we started recording, I did one too. Actually,
oh, did you?
I did two. And that's anyway. Yeah. That's just at, agz.me/interactive-storyteller. And actually I shared all the quest cards right there too, because they're not like in one gallery anywhere. They're hidden behind links. Another fun thing, if you feel like still playing, you're hearing this, you're like, you're really curious and you want to sample, but you don't want to go through the tough choice of 11 different cards. There's a randomize button on the quest page. Just click a button and do whichever one pops up.
Do we want to pull up one of Dudrius's real quick and respond to it? Because
yeah.
Let me. I got it highlighted in the rundown right now in the Google Doc. You see the one I'm talking about?
Will do. Pulling it up on my iPad.
It's the third link in the list. Yeah, if you pull up on the iPad and then show it. I just love how he did this in under 2 minutes, yes. And it's such a simple addition. So you have these two figures, and the challenge was doodle sketch. Two quick changes to each of these silhouettes, make one of them look silly and the other one look scary. And so added the simple smiley eye and then a dollar bill in the character's hand, and then the other character looks crazed and is chasing them with these scary teeth. And what I love about this is that already I'm invited to start creating story, right? This guy's chasing the other guy because he took his money. I made that connection. He didn't even write anything about that, but that simple addition of that dollar bill in the character's hand starts to imply story again.
Yeah, and I would assume that his happiness is going to change soon.
Right. And then I don't know if we want to pull up one of John's kids' entries. His daughter did one too. That's so cool.
Which one on the list, Jersey?
Let me highlight it in the Google Doc for you.
Is number
you
one. See it?
Third link.
Nope. Third link. All right, cool. Boom. Can open it.
And it took over 5 minutes, but then, you know, she turned one scary, one silly, and what she did with it was an adjustment to the mouth on one character and the hands. Look at this added big hook hands and this weird candy cane-shaped kind of mouth, right? And then the other one, silly, well, big feet, big bunny ears, boom, silly, big goofy eyes, silly. So even a 7-year-old can participate in the quest. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's very awesome work. And that's what we wanted to do. I mean, all of them. There's Ryan. Ryan Estrada does the three shapes.
He did one now. Oh, wait, do that again, Ryan. I want to pull it up on the screen. While we were working, boom, circle, triangle, square. Sweet.
And I heard the scribbling. It was, you were moving. You had to have earned at least 100 points, if not 200.
Actually, yeah,
nice.
For sure. So anything else to report on the quest this time, Rob?
No, I mean, the cards are still out there, and feel free to you know, keep playing or posting. And if you have any questions or you know, feedback on it, by all means, you can hit us up via, you know, at our Twitter Twitter accounts, Lean Into Art, or, you know, at Jersey or at Rob Stenzinger. Or, of course, you know, check us, you know, hit our comment link on at leanintoart.com, and there's a link in the footer. And be fun to hear additional reactions and stuff to this.
We were asked recently about the quest. They said, do I need to start at quest one and work my way through? And I just want to address it publicly. No, of course not. You can go. You start wherever you want to start, whatever one is appealing to you. And just because we set these deadline thresholds for like talking about it on the show doesn't mean that we might not do a quest episode down the line if we get enough quests turned in. So yeah, start at the one that's interesting to you and then move all over the place. I think if you've been listening to the show for a while, you should know by now that Rob and I are not necessarily hooked on the idea of a procedure and a prescription, right? So, yeah, and there's all the different quest cards. Man, you know what, Rob? That bird one that you just showed, the bird hero, turning the bird into a hero, that's a hard one. I could not do it.
I disbelieve, sir. But this was my take on it. I don't know, less heroic, more of a, I don't know, maybe he's into recreational drugs,
he's
I don't
zen.
Know. Maybe. But yeah, that's the thing, is like there isn't a right answer to this, but it's a see what your brain does.
Yeah.
Your hands and your brain do when you have to struggle with this. Hopefully it's a lot of fun. This one, I don't know if you can read it because of the screen sharing.
Are you food?
I'm Kilroy. Yeah. Right. And this was the quest card number one. Draw a word balloon for each of these characters. Have them greet one another in a way that reveals something about themselves.
Super cool.
That's what this is. And, you know, maybe we'll do more quest cards at some point. I mean, who knows?
Well,
there's a good chance of that. But
I don't have a quest for this episode to announce. I will announce a quest with the next one, and I can assure you that I'm going to try to do something with similar cards. You sent me the template, and I think I'm going to run with it because I think it's a really, really cool idea to break it down into those manageable chunks. And like we talked about in a past episode, I've been playing with this in my classrooms, and it's really effective to break it down to something that you can do in 5 minutes or less, and really, honestly, do in 5 minutes or less. So yeah, leanintoart.com/quests. Where people can find out more about that. We've got 8 of them up now.
11. Or no, 8 quests, right.
11 8 quests. Cards 11 quest. Cards in quest 8. In
quest.
Yeah. Okay, well, hey, guess what? I think we got this one walked around.
We do. Now I'm curious, how are we going to promote this episode when we... are we going to live...
25 headlines.
25
crazy
headlines.
Headlines? Yeah.
Yep.
25 headlines. Yeah, I did actually try that exercise when because I am working on the yeah, anyway, I'm working on a project I really can't comment on publicly yet, but when I was working on the title for it, because it needs a title, I did the 25 headlines exercise, and it was difficult, but I felt better about it. So that's cool. 25, huh?
And that's what I'll be doing when I'm putting together the post for this one. And I want to underline something, Ryan, that you pointed out earlier, that when you're talking about Cracked and how they changed their headlines, I forget that we have the ability to do this.
That's true.
It's a liquid medium. We get to change it if we want to. I should go back and change that He-Man and the Masters of the Universe post, because the headline right now is a Masters of the Universe proposal. It's okay. It's descriptive. But is it?
It's very public television. It's very.
So
Masters of the Universe. Yeah,
one thing, when you're doing your 25 headline, like I've never really done it for posts, but with, like, when I'm titling a book, what really helps me is I'll take a chunk of time where I purposely write like the 100 worst names I can think of, because, you know, there's the things that you won't write down because, no, that's not very good. But if you will physically write down the worst title, one of those is going to give you the idea for the right title. So let your brain work to its fullest capacity. Like, let it write the worst things you can, because that's how you get to the good ideas.
Oh my God, that is so good. I am totally,
Can you help me with an example? Like, what's a worst thing? Like,
I wish I had somewhere in this room in some drawer, there's probably like for every book I've done, there's a page of really bad names, but,
okay, so let's go. All right, so Ryan, let's say I've hired you to do or we're collaborating on a book of that's all about a bunch of mummy characters in a tomb, and they're
mummies alive. Tell my mummy.
And they're starting a restaurant. What's that?
Don't tell my mummy.
Oh my God, that's
mummies, mummy and daddy. You start with a lot of really bad puns, but you get somewhere, you know.
That's cool.
I don't know.
Wait till you pull
tomb puns. When you're writing bad ones, you spend a lot of time on thesaurus.com and Rhyme Zone.
I hadn't heard of Rhyme Zone.
Nice.
I was gonna say, wait till you pull the wraps off of this one.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, unwrapped. Yeah,
But yeah.
Oh wow. Because I did say at the end it was they opened a restaurant. So then wraps are an obvious. There you go. Yep.
Yep.
I was so busy thinking about bad titles I didn't even hear the end of the pitch. I'm like, I'm on it. Let me go.
You ready? okay. Cool. But that sounds like it's freeing. Then it's like I don't have to worry anymore. I know what the bad stuff is. Mm-hmm.
And back and forth helps too. Like a lot of times I'll like grab someone who randomly happens to be on Facebook chat and be like, we're doing bad names right now. Let's go.
That's pretty good. This reminds me of some of the Pixar's 22 rules of storytelling. One of the things they say in there, I think, is like start with what wouldn't happen and then work your way to what would happen, or to get past the obvious, like write down like all the obvious things till you get to the thing that's not obvious, right? Mm-hmm. But this may turn into a quest, is writing the 25 worst things you can. Oh, that's so good.
Well, I get into the hundreds, man. I don't stop at 25 because it's too much fun. I'm already here, like, you know, mummy rhymes with yummy, it rhymes with tummy. There's hundreds of names just out of those. Right there, man.
Oh, tummy is such a terrible word, too.
That's tummy the benefit of it, man.
Tummy and snacks are like two of my least favorite words in the entire world. Ugh. I'll have to remember that for writing down terrible things. Rhyme Zone, too. I'm going to have to check that out. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for making time to be on the show and drop all this like awesome theorizing. I should say, for folks who are watching live, and actually this is going to drop before it happens, September 4th, you're going to be on the Comics Are Great show with me.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
So talk about working for Exposure.
Exposure_TXT. If anybody hasn't been following that on Twitter, that is hysterical. So it's so funny, and it's so disturbing.
Well, we can't quite tease what that prod. I mean, I bet a lot of people would know what that is just from... They probably follow it already, but let's say for those of you who need a little more context.
Yeah.
What
is for exposure?
What is this? What's this for exposure thing, Ryan?
I started a Twitter called for_exposure_text, which is just a collection of the most ridiculous quotes from advertisements from people who expect artists to work for free. Mm. And it's like, I just did it on a whim as a joke, and like, I thought I could get a couple of days of content out of it, and now it's already pre-programmed to do multiple posts per day until next July.
Oh my gosh.
Because, like, it's so much fun. Like, it's so much fun to go through these now, like, since I'm not the one that has to respond to it. Like, when I got emails like that running a commission site, like, it was unbearable. But now that I can be the outsider looking at it, the people are ridiculous. So, it's hilarious.
So we will talk about that at length on the Comics Are Great show, streamed in the same location, comicsaregreat.tv. It'll be happening at 12:30 p.m. Eastern time, September 4th. So if you enjoyed this one, check out that one. And I'm going to have to look up that GIF that or GIF that you posted of you throwing your MacBook from reading exposure underscore text posts. It's on Tumblr and it's hysterical because every person I've shown it to, they chuckle when they see Ryan reading angrily, but then everybody goes when they see him pick up a MacBook and throw it against a wall.
No way. That's I have to see this. Was it really a MacBook or was there some special?
It was my MacBook that had just died. And I specifically didn't tell anyone for like weeks that my MacBook had died so that I could do that in a video. And that's another example of how the headline works, in that the video that came from is one of my, like, I on forexposure.txt, I also do like dramatic readings of people's posts, and that's my favorite one, but no one has watched it. Like the script is I like it, and then, you know, I throw the computer and there's a bunch of funny stuff going on, but no one has watched it because my headline was so bad. But it's on Twitter, so I can't edit it. The headline that I did was, in today's dramatic reading, you will be seeing some penis mostly bulge, because that's the funniest. That's one of the funniest lines from the. No, maybe that was a different one. Sorry, it was a different one. It was a different video, but that video no one watched because that was the funniest line in the video. But what made it funny is that it had nothing to do with the rest of the video, and just gotcha. He's talking about money, and all of a sudden he's talking about how much penis he's going to draw into the comic. So, but in making that, it just made it seem like a dirty video, and no one clicked on it.
Like, I can't click on that.
I bet, yeah. Though, the one that did get clicked a lot was watch for the moment where the dog pees on me.
Yeah.
That was a good one. That was a good headline.
I'm
that
missing follows... out. I got to get caught up on this.
Yeah. So everybody should follow him on Tumblr too. But anyway, yeah, Ryan, awesome. Awesome episode. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Ryan.
And Rob, thank you for doing the show with me every other week on Google Plus or on comicsaregreat.tv. We stream live at 9 p.m. every other Thursday. You can participate via YouTube comments. Sometimes we're still trying to figure out a chat solution that works for everybody, that isn't too nerdy. If you guys got any suggestions, you can email us. You can go to leanintoart.com. There's a contact form there. We do shows in between these shows that are not streamed live, and those are the extra leans. And the only way to get them is to sign up for our newsletter at leanintoart.com. You can check out the quest there and, also browse the archives. Anything else that I missed, Rob?
No, that's it there. Where you can send us questions. By the way, we welcome curveballs that get submitted from you guys, and so you can send us that via the comment form I mentioned earlier on this episode. Just go to leanintoart.com. There's a comment link in the footer, and send us a curveball or send us a question. And other than that, if you're curious about, hearing some more stuff, because this is every other week, you covered it, Jersey. There's the Extra Lean podcast, which is available to our newsletter subscribers.
And the newsletter, I should say, the new one just dropped. I read it. Rob wrote it. It's not just, hey, here's a few clickable links, the things that you should buy from us. No, it's a full-on magazine of useful resources that we comb the internet for. You could follow us on all the different social places, or you could just have this newsletter delivered to you where all of those links and resources that we collect are delivered right to your inbox. So
yeah, try to throw a little mini essay in there, and also which who knows if I'm on or not that day, but that's there's a little bit of extra love in it, right? It's not just a pile of links and buy our stuff.
What were you gonna say, Ryan?
Said, how was the headline on the email?
Yeah, what was the headline?
The headline. Well, so okay, we use MailChimp as part of our service, and they have essentially a guideline to subject lines in emails that get clicked, and evidently when it comes to newsletters, mentioning newsletter and mentioning that it's that it's the next issue or whatnot, that's one of the most popular opened links. So it's not actually that enticing, but I think maybe I need to practice the other approach and see what's instead of, I took the safe route, Ryan. I didn't.
You could be like, in this issue of the newsletter, you'll find out blank.
Yeah.
Nice.
Actually, yeah, that's not bad. That's not a bad idea. I got to be thinking about that for my contributions to future newsletters and my own newsletter. Curiosity, context, setting expectation. There's the rubric, not a recipe, but a rubric for as you're putting something together that you're excited about. Mm-hmm. All right. So thanks everybody for hanging out with us and watching live. And we'll be back in a couple weeks, another Lean Into Art cast. Until then, I have been Jersey Drozd of leanintoart.com and Jersey on the Twitters.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of leanintoart.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter. And our guest,
I'm Ryan Estrada from ryanestrada.com.
Yay.
And okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.
Peter Star Northrup in the comments says the people demand more Ryan Estrada.
Peter Star Northrup. He's a good kid.